This is episode number 66 with Chris Norton. Welcome to the Rise Higher podcast. I'm your host, Stephanie Kwong, and each week I'll bring you an inspiring guest with an empowering message to help you rise higher and live your best life. Each guest shares their time of struggle and setback and what specific mindsets, tools, practices, or habits they use to overcome so that you can apply them to your life. This show is to remind you that you're not alone and that there's always a pathway up. Thanks for spending some time with me today. I'm grateful to be on this journey with you. Our struggles are a call for us to rise. So here we go. Let's dive deep now so we can rise higher together. Hello, my loves, and welcome to the Rise Higher podcast. Can you guys believe that we are just a few weeks away from ushering in a new decade? I mean, it is so freaking crazy how fast time is flying by. I mean, I remember when I celebrated the big turn of the century, and now we are 20 years in. Now, I am setting some big intentions for 2020 and getting really clear about who I want to become and what I want to manifest into my reality as this new decade rolls in. Now, setting powerful soul intentions and knowing how to energetically align myself to have what I want effortlessly flow in is my jam. And I love guiding people on how to do this too. Now, we skipped this year. But for the past 5 years, I've done an online intention setting workshop that shows you some of the most powerful ways to create and manifest anything that you want. I skipped this year, but I've been getting messages from a lot of different people asking if I was going to run it for 2020 because of how impactful it was for them in previous years and because it's such a huge year coming up. Well, I'm happy to share that it is about to go down. Yep, I am bringing the online intention setting workshop back. And I'm going to run it before 2020 hits so that you're fully clear and present to all that your soul desires to create before we ring in the new year. I'm sure you all know the power of intention. Intention is a starting point of every desire and dream. Intention is the creative power that fulfills all of our needs, whether that's for money, health, relationships, life purpose, spiritual awakening, deeper fulfillment, or love. And everything that happens in the universe starts with intention. Now, most people, you know, they go around life reacting to it. They aren't clear with what they want, or they sit hoping, praying, and wishing, or waiting for the things to just happen or to show up, and then they wonder why they don't have what they want, or why another year goes by and nothing changes. Well, this is because they haven't harnessed the power of intention, or they aren't setting intentions in the right way to ensure that their brain and the universe can align with what they're saying that they want. In fact, there's a lot of people that set intentions in a way that actually blocks what they want. So if you're ready to blow the roof off in 2020 and to manifest all that your amazing soul desires, make sure that you join me online for this special training that's going to be on Saturday, December the 14th at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. So in this training, I'm going to share with you a very specific intention setting exercise that has helped me and thousands of my clients powerfully manifest all of our soul desires and more. And I'm also going to share with you specific tools and hypnosis techniques to partner with your subconscious mind to support you in manifesting your intentions. And I'm going to share metaphysical techniques to support you in getting energetically aligned with the universe to supercharge what you want and to ensure that your intentions manifest in your reality. Now, the training is going to be online so you can access it from the comfort of your home. And if you're not able to make the live training, don't you worry. It's going to be recorded and you can watch it when it works for you. So if you're ready to welcome in the new decade and to make 2020 your best year yet, make sure you get your awesome self into my Manifest Your Best 2020 online workshop. That's happening again on Saturday, December the 14th at 10 a.m. PST, and it's going to be a couple hours of time. Now, you can get more deets about this by going to bit.ly/manifestyourbest2020. So that's bit, the period, and then ly /manifestyourbest2020. Okay, so on to today's episode. You guys are in for a treat. I've got the incredibly inspiring Chris Norton, who is an author and motivational speaker. Now, when Chris was 18, he had a split-second decision on the field during a college football game that changed his life forever. And today, you're going to hear Chris's journey from a life-altering spinal cord injury that had him lose feeling and movement from his neck down to achieving the seemingly impossible. Now, Chris was given a 3% chance of any sort of improvement, but he didn't accept that as his fate. And Chris beat the odds. He worked his butt off to regain movement. And years later, he achieved his impossible when he walked across the stage of his college graduation, capturing over 300 million views online. And a few years after that, he conquered the challenge of walking his wife, Emily, down the aisle at their wedding. So Chris shares the behind the scenes of what it really took to achieve his goal. And you guys, you know this, it's always much more than the highlight reel that we see online. And Chris also shares the mindset that he uses to stay focused on his future instead of staying stuck in the past. And you guys are going to hear how a very pivotal moment in the hospital helped Chris to shift out of anger and into gratitude and hope. And this moment, I mean, I like to call these God moments, which you're going to hear, but it gave me chills when Chris shared it. So I know that you guys are going to be inspired by Chris's faith, his determination, and perseverance to achieve his goal of walking across that stage and later down the aisle. And we also talk about finding hope in the darkness of times and the danger of comparing ourselves to anyone, whether it's our past self or others, and how to get out of that negative loop. And you guys are also going to hear how Chris empowers others to get back up when they get knocked down, reminding us that no matter what life throws at us, it doesn't have to keep us down. And we always have the power to stand. Now, Chris recently released his new book, The 7 Longest Yards, that he co-authored with his wife, Emily. He's also created the Chris Norton Foundation. He's fostered 17 children and adopted 5 girls. Chris is a true inspiration, and I cannot wait for you guys to hear his story and all the wisdom that he's gained along his journey. Chris is all heart, and I know that you're going to feel that today. So get ready for another powerful episode. And you guys, please take a moment to share this episode out. So whether it's on your socials or make sure that you hit that share button and send it out after you have a listen to someone in your life who may need to hear this beautiful boost of inspiration to know that they can turn things around and achieve their impossible. All right, guys, here we go with Chris.
What is up, Chris? Welcome to the Rise Higher podcast. So grateful to have you here today.
Yeah, thank you for having me on.
Of course. I'm so grateful to our friend Angel Chernoff, who introduced the two of us. She knows the intention of this podcast. I was like, oh my gosh, you need to talk to Chris. He's super legit. Him and his wife, Emily, you guys have written a book that she got a pre-copy of and read and loved it. And when I deep dove into your story and your mission, I was so inspired by what you've overcome and how you have massively inspired people with your story and your journey.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. It's been quite the journey, and just taking baby steps to get to where I'm at today.
Yeah. Well, I would love to open this up with having you share about your story from when you starting back in 2010 when you were playing football.
Yeah. Almost at the time of this recording, almost exactly 9 years ago, I was a freshman at Luther College, 18-year-old kid, playing college football. And on this third quarter, this beautiful fall day, about 6th game of the season, I'm running down the field to cover the kick, and I see this opening forming, and I know that ball carrier is going to run through that hole. And so I make a split second decision to make a diving leap for his legs where I thought he would be. And I mistimed my jump just by a split second. So instead of getting my head in front of the ball carrier, my head collides right with the ball carrier. And in an instant, I lose all feeling and movement from my neck down. And I can clearly remember the, you know, the thuds of the shoulder pads and players above me crashing into each other. The whistle blows, the pile clears, but I can't get up. And I'm trying to push off the ground, but nothing's working. And I was so confused. I was just like, okay, this is odd. I need to get up, but this is going to be embarrassing if they have to stop the game for me. And I'm just telling myself, Chris, get up. But nothing's working. Like someone just turned the power off to my body. And I just kept waiting for something to come back. And eventually, you know, the athletic trainers and the paramedics all get involved. And slowly became evident that something very serious is happening.
Wow. And what happened, Chris?
Yeah, so I suffered a severe spinal cord injury. And it would take me, you know, many, many years before I can really start to recover from that. It was a severe spinal cord injury, C3, C4, and a grade 4 fracture, which is one of the most severe fractures and dislocations that you can have.
Wow. And you were given a 3% chance to ever even move below your neck, right?
Yeah. So I'm flown out to Mayo Clinic, and after surgery, the, you know, the surgeon, they kind of came up with a number that's 3% chance of, yeah, ever regaining any feeling or movement back below the neck. And hearing that 3% odds, I was just stunned. I just like couldn't believe it, because yesterday at that time, you know, I was walking. I was suiting up for my college football game. And then here I am laying in a hospital bed, paralyzed with a 3% chance of ever moving anything. It was surreal. And I remember just feeling really numb. And then I got mad and I was just said to myself, like, no way, not me. Like, this is not going to be my life. I'm just not going to accept it. I'm going to do whatever I can each and every day to get out of it. And I'm going to be part of that 3% that does recover. And so I just started doing the only thing I could do, which was just to nod my head yes and no. And I just kept nodding my head over and over again. And I looked like a giant bobblehead bouncing my head around. Eventually, I'm able to shrug my left shoulder, breaking the 3% odds. But it was just kind of a very gradual process of just trying to get anything to move.
Yeah. How, I mean, I know that you said you went from obviously numb to angry. I couldn't even imagine what that'd feel like. Again, going from I'm walking and playing and running on the field one day to all of a sudden, all I can do is nod my head. What were kind of like, how were you sitting in your anger for a while? Were you shifting? Like, what was that experience for you even after the months after that moment happened for you?
Yeah, it was, you know, up and down for me. So definitely at nighttime is when I struggled the most. That's when all my fears and doubts just hit me full force, and just wondering about my future and, yeah, you know, questions in my head of just, you know, will I ever go back to school again? Will I have to live with my parents the rest of my life? Will a girl ever want to be with me? And just sitting in that and just wondering about my future was horrible. It was so frustrating. I cried myself to sleep. Every time I tried to move and I couldn't, it would just send me in a panic attack, just trying to break free from these like invisible chains that were holding my body down. So it was really rough to go through that. I'm really thankful that I had a great family support, community support, mm-hmm. friends support, like that were always there and just really kept me distracted. They kept my spirits up. They're all just pretty optimistic, positive people. And they just radiated positivity. And I really needed that. And that kind of helped keep my spirits up during the day. But like I said, when nighttime came, there was no shying away from that anger, those fears, those doubts.
Yeah. I know it's interesting because so often it's, easy, not easy, but we can be distracted when we're with others to kind of be the joy or the support or the encouragement we need. But really when it matters and it counts the most is when we're by ourselves and we are not hearing their voices, but we're hearing our own. Mm-hmm. And how then did you, because look, I know if you kept that mindset, right? If you continue to be in those fears every single night, you would not have gone on to achieve what you have so far. So there was definitely a shift that needed to start to happen for you. When did you start to create that shift for yourself so that you can move beyond kind of the anger and the doubt?
Yeah, one night really in particular stands out to me as far as when I really started to make that shift to really believing in myself and having even more confidence that I was going to beat it and get out of the situation. And it came about the fourth night of the ICU. And so I'm lying there awake about 2 a.m. and a physician comes in to check my vitals, which is pretty typical for someone to come in and check your vitals every 2 hours. Mm-hmm. But it's all very clinical conversation. They check it, they leave. But this physician, she does something different. She comes to my bedside. She gets down on one knee and she says, "Chris, look me in the eyes." And she was kind of mean about it. And so I lock eyes with her, and she's this short, slender, reddish hair woman with glasses, probably in her 60s. And she has this voice that sounds like she came straight out of a Western movie. And she says, "My name is Georgia. I'm from Wyoming. Do you know anyone from Wyoming?" And I said, "No." And I'm thinking, you know, where is this going? And then she says, "Well, people from Wyoming don't tell lies. And I want you to know you will beat this. You will beat this." I just instantly just started crying.
Making me cry.
Yeah, it was just, I was so overcome with just like this belief, and the conviction in her voice was like the exact thing like I needed in that moment. Like I was so scared, so fearful, and to have, you know, a physician speak life into me, someone I looked up to and I believed like what they said, to say something like that, especially when every conversation up to that was not very optimistic. It was pretty, here you need to start adjusting to this new way of life and not to expect anything more than what you have right now, which was hard pill to swallow. And I tried to, push those doubts and those conversations away, but there's no denying it. They're going to seep in. And for her to come in and just say that, just gave me the confidence that I needed, the belief. And she just kind of refilled my faith tank to just keep pushing forward. And I just would continue to hear her words, echoing in my head from every single day when I was training.
That is so powerful. Thank you for sharing that. I got chills the moment you said, "You're going to beat this," and literally brought tears to my eyes. It's what a blessing that she was by your bedside, that she was your doctor, and truly she spoke life into you, and that you chose to carry that with you too, right? Mm-hmm. Because sometimes we do need something to lean on, whether it is this repetitive thing that we tell ourselves or the faith of someone else to build the faith in ourselves, that we can overcome our adversities and the challenges that are thrown our way, because they're really meant for us to expand and elevate and grow in some capacity. And I know for you, you've done such a tremendous job of it. And you actually, years later, not only did you beat the 3% chance to move below your neck, like have movement again, but you also did something absolutely tremendous at your graduation. I would love for you to share about that.
Yeah. So I was able to return back to school, and I set this goal that I want to walk across the stage of my college graduation. And I didn't know exactly how I was going to do it, but it just gave me a time point out in the future that I could work towards. And so I just worked as hard as I could, just one day at a time leading up to this graduation walk. And in the process, I also met my now wife, Emily, and she really came alongside me and really helped me push myself to accomplish this graduation walk. And we would train together. She would walk with me, and eventually it became apparent that I was going to have her help me across the stage. And to make things even more stressful or more nerve-wracking for that weekend, I actually asked her to marry me the day before the graduation walk, which was pretty special. And, you know, thankfully she said yes. Otherwise the next day would have been really awkward, but it worked out for the best. And so it was really special to have my fiance then help me, you know, across the stage. And leading up to this graduation walk, you know, it's kind of like almost like an Olympic athlete. You train, you know, 4 years for your one moment. And this was 4 years for this one moment. I put a lot of just, I don't know, emphasis on this walk. I just wanted to not only just prove to myself, but to other people that, you know, you can keep going, like you can keep pushing forward and you can persevere no matter what life has to throw at you, and life can still be fulfilling and beautiful. So I put all this weight on myself. I was nervous. I was thinking too that everyone in the room, like, it's hot at graduations. It's a slow process. They just drag out. And I kept thinking, will people be like angry about how slow I'm moving across the stage? Like, are people going to like boo me off stage? But quite the opposite was true. Yeah. I was blown away by like everyone's response, and they instantly just start cheering for me and encourage me across the stage. And yeah, I took, you know, it was probably about 4 yards across the stage to receive my diploma, and the room was just electric, and there was just all these tears. I couldn't believe it. I was looking out and I just seen all these people crying. I saw some of my friends who I've never seen cry before, just crying. But it was just like a fun, beautiful moment, and something that was captured, and we shared it, and it went viral. And, you know, over 300 million people on Facebook alone I viewed that video, which is pretty surreal to that many people were just moved by this walk. And so that was really a really special moment, as you can imagine, for Emily and I.
Yeah, how powerful. And I've got, obviously, I would love for you to share kind of the how you even got to your graduation day. Like, what was the process for you to go from, wow, I can shrug my shoulders, to being able to walk across that stage?
Yeah, I would say one of the biggest things that I had to teach myself was to let go of the past and to quit comparison. Especially early on, everything was back to how life was before as an able-bodied individual. Every single time I would take myself back to that moment, it would just take away the joy, the progress, the motivation that I had to put into my recovery. One moment in particular, I was in the occupational therapy room. On the rehab floor, it's probably 2 weeks in. And I'm doing arm curls, and I was just able to curl my left arm up to my shoulder. And so I was doing pretty well. So they decided they're going to put an ankle weight, or a Velcro ankle weight, strap it around my wrist. And it was a half pound weight. And so, you know, this half pound weight feels like so heavy for me. And so I'm trying to curl it, and my arm's shaking, and I finally get it all the way up. And everyone, I had my parents, my sisters, my occupational therapist, everyone starts cheering, and we're so happy. And I was so happy and excited to make this progress. Like, this is a huge deal. Then I flash back to the amount of weight that I could curl before my injury.
And that's not good. Bad news. You don't go there. Yeah,
exactly. All the excitement and the joy and the pride and the accomplishment that I really just achieved just got ripped away. And I just felt myself fighting back the tears as I was just really discouraged, thinking about like where I'm at and how far I have to go. And it was really tough. But that moment really, it stung. But I used it to like acknowledge the fact that I have to let go of the past. Like, I have to take responsibility for exactly where I'm at right now. Like, I can't change anything. All I can do is just work on today and just continue to progress with where I'm at and where I want to go. And just knowing that your future will take care of itself when you take care of today. And just there's no going back to the past. So anyone listening to this, it's so easy to fall back into that trap of comparison or to your past. And that just really helped me to just, I just kept, and even every, even today, there's still moments I face where I realize I have to let go of that hurt or let go of that comparison or what I used to be able to do or what I envisioned how my life would look. And every single time I'm able to let go, I'm able to then move forward in a better, more efficient way. And I start focusing on my abilities and what I can do. And so that process of that 4.5 years leading up to that graduation walk was just a lot of those moments of just letting it go so I can get to work with what I have and what I'm able to do.
That is so powerful, Chris. And thank you for sharing that. I think comparison, I mean, for you, it was like comparison to your past self. And I think for a lot of people, their struggle is comparison to others also, but just comparison in general. What are they, what's that? I think it's a Teddy Roosevelt quote, is like comparison is a thief of joy. Yeah. And it truly is. There's nothing beneficial about comparing. It's really almost a mental tool used to have you feel bad about yourself.
Yeah.
And it doesn't do any good. And I love that you were able to reframe and shift it and take responsibility, like you said, of, mm-hmm. You know, being in the now, choosing my present to build my future. And that's extraordinary because I know a lot of people, myself included, I've, you know, been stuck in the past at times. And even through like negative things of the past that I'll loop in my mind through. And again, it doesn't actually serve you today or to move forward. And anytime we, you know, think that our life currently isn't the way that it's supposed to be or we want it to be is when we create so much suffering for ourselves. Yeah. So I really love that you shared that bit with people because I think that would really, that's so helpful to like go, just be here now.
Yeah.
Build today because that's going to create your future. Mm-hmm. So really cool. And then not only did you walk across that stage of graduation, but you had your next goal, which was going down the longest 7 yards. And I would love for you to share that story with us.
Yeah. So, you know, about a year and a half goes by of, and Em and I are engaged and she calls me one day. I'm on my way to a speaking engagement and she says, Chris, your video is going viral once again on Facebook. There's millions and millions of views. People from all over the world are writing to you, you know, sharing just how this walk has inspired them to overcome their own challenges and their adversities. And I was just blown away by that kind of response and how much it could uplift people. And so she says, Chris, you have to walk me down the aisle of our wedding.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not asking you to do it for me, but just for all those people who need that example and need hope, like with their situation that they're going through right now. And this, like walking down the aisle of our wedding could be that moment that can just uplift someone else. And so knowing that really kind of gave me the purpose and the motivation I needed to want to walk Emma down the aisle. Cause we talked about it before, like, okay, that'd be kind of a special thing, but it wasn't necessarily special for us. We walk to each other all the time. Like there's nothing like symbolic for us to do that. And like, I could go down the aisle with her in a wheelchair and she would be happy. I would be happy with that. But seeing that there's this opportunity to that, knowing that people are counting on us and kind of needing that example just made it that much more important and special. And so that's what I started training and set the goal. I want to walk her 7 yards down the aisle of her wedding, which is 3 yards further than what we did for the graduation walk. And then also it's 7 yards for the 7 years since my injury. So that was another kind of a special symbolic thing. And then we're going to do it side by side the same way we'll be going through the rest of our lives together. And I can remember the first time we tried practicing this walk leading up to our wedding. And she stands me up. She moves to my side for the first time. And I try taking a step and I couldn't even take one step. Like I could not slide either foot forward. And the more I try, the more frustrated I'm getting. And I get to the point where I'm like, Emily, just sit me down. Like, I don't know why I set this goal. Like this is way too stressful and way too much pressure. Like this is insane. I can't even take one step. But then I think about all those people who message me. I think about my family and my friends, everyone who's ever looked at me for an example of courage or hope. And so I realized, like, can I let them down? And I can't. Like, I have to keep going no matter what. And that's when I really discovered the power of considering who's counting on you. And that all of us have people who are counting on us. As a friend, a family member, some sort of relative, coworker, whoever it is. Like, there's people who do need your example, and that you can be a positive influence and even an inspiration to them. And so that's always kind of a reminder to myself when I feel like kind of slacking off or giving up. I think about who I might be letting down. So that just kind of kept giving me the energy to finally, when that wedding day came, April 21st of 2018, I was able to walk Emily 7 yards down the aisle. And to also make that walk even more stressful and a little bit more pressure, back when I couldn't take a step, there was this film company that wanted to capture a wedding, and they wanted to capture it to produce a documentary film on my life story. And they already named the movie 7 Yards. So there's
no pressure.
There's no wiggle room in that title. There's not, can't be 3.5 yards. It's 7 yards. So I had to make sure that we got that, those 7 yards down there, but it went really well. And it, again, that went, it went viral as well. And I got to inspire other people, and it was pretty special.
Yeah. I mean, Chris, you guys could have just invited 10 people and only walked like 5 feet. You didn't have to go all the way down that aisle.
Right.
Yeah. No, but that's so inspiring and really cool that even for motivation, you're utilizing whatever you need to keep you moving, but that your purpose and intention, and we're going to learn more about the work that you're doing, is so much about supporting other people. You're so focused out. It's really incredible. But as you're doing that, you're growing. I mean, what you had to do to turn yourself inside out, to walk down those 7 aisles, yeah, you had other people inspire that motivation in you, but who you had to become to take that on and to stay the course when it was hard, really, it was a catalyst for the next level of growth for you. And I know that you mentioned when we were talking on the phone before we, you know, when we first got connected, you said that people see the highlight reel moments and not the behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. And I'd love for you to just go a little bit deeper with that, because a lot of times I think, especially with social media, right, they might see, wow, look at this guy. He like walked across the stage, or now he walked down his wife down the aisle. And it's so inspiring, that moment. And some people can take it both ways. They can go like, wow, I can do that too. Or wow, I could never do that. But if they actually, because they think it's an impossible feat and they think it might've, not that it was easy, but if they actually know what it took, that it wasn't always easy, but what you did to really continue to get there, I think that could inspire those people who might normally take the route to quit on themselves or feel doubt or self-judgment, but to have that, use that as fuel to rise up. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so leading up to that, even the graduation walk, there was plenty of times where, so one thing that we did was I relocated from Iowa to Michigan to live there for at least 4 months leading up to my graduation walk, just to focus on my walking and to get my walking back and to, you know, successfully walk across the stage. And Emily, she wanted to be there with me and to help me. And I need someone to help me out anyway. So she, so we moved up to Michigan, and it was pretty hard. There's times where I'm questioning, you know, why am I doing all of this? Like, this is insane that I relocated not only myself, but relocated Emily. Like, what if this doesn't even work? And I had all these doubts and these fears. And there's plenty of times where I remember one time where I was really struggling with my walking. I just crying, just like, this is, I should stop. Like, I need to go back. And thankfully Emily was there to just kind of like lift me up, that like, just stay the course, like don't stop. Although like it's scary. It's kind of, there's so much uncertainty, but we just got to keep going, just taking one step at a time. And so there's been plenty of those moments where I felt like giving up, and I felt like just throwing in the towel. And those times are going to come where you just, maybe you can't see the light at the end of the tunnel. And there might not be any light at this point, but there will be if you just keep taking those steps and just keep taking it one day at a time and just not stop and just be relentless and persistent. And I feel like that's where I talk about, you know, there's so much more than those highlight reel moments. There's so much persistence just relentlessness. It's just one day at a time, spending, 4 to 6 hours a day on my training alone. Like I didn't have much of a life. I was training and then I was exhausted. Like I was just wiped out. And I couldn't even just sit still and like watch TV. I had to just be doing an exercise all the time. And so all those hours, all those times, those go unseen. Those aren't the things that make the news, right? It's the walks of across the stage or down the aisle. And then also people assume that, you know, Emily and I have this like fairy tale relationship and connection, which we do. We have an amazing connection. I love her so much, but we had a lot of struggles ourselves, and it just takes so much work for a relationship. And there was a time where I didn't know if there would be a wedding between Emily and I. And Emily, our struggles really came too from Emily went through a really tough time with depression and anxiety. And those are just some of the challenges that you can't see on somebody. Everyone can see the challenges that I face. Mm-hmm. Everyone sees my physical challenges. Like there's no hiding what I'm going through, but someone going through anxiety, depression, you can hide that sometimes pretty well. You can hide sometimes you can't see someone going through a divorce or struggling to pay their bills. There's so many things that we can hide, a lot of painful challenges that are internal that we just don't know what people are dealing with. And so in this book that we wrote, The Seven Longest Yards, Emily is the co-author. And so she opens up about her struggles and really how she got to that point and then how she was able to get through it and get out of it. So that's where we really motivated with this book, because people have seen our highlight reel moments, but not the real tough moments and tough decisions that we all go through and we have to face at some point or another.
What were some of the ways that she was able to move through her depression and anxiety?
I would say one of the biggest things was going back to church. So just like going to a place that was speaking life and was encouraging and uplifting. So just the environment that a church can create was really powerful. And then she began to realize that she can't do everything herself. She's a very strong, independent woman. Mm-hmm. If you ever done the Enneagrams, she's type 2. To a
supporter.
If anyone knows what that is, she is that, like, so strongly, and she loves supporting other people, but she does not like to support herself. It's always outwards, and so
they give and don't receive.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So she wanted to give and it drained her, and where she stopped doing things for herself and was not going to depend on anyone else because she felt like that was a weakness to her. And finally, just through church, she was like, no way, I can't do this alone. And then she made an appointment with a health specialist. And, right away, they said, you're going through depression, you have anxiety. You need to take this medication, I think, will really help you. And so she took the medication and just completely, she said, you'll notice the difference in 2 weeks. And in 2 weeks, it was like a switch went off in her, like the light came on, and she was, back to kind of like how she is, just full of love and passion. Now, medicine's not maybe the answer to everyone, but for her, the faith and then the medication was just life-changing for her.
Yeah. How do you choose hope when it's hard?
That's extremely hard. And I think what helps me is just with my faith of knowing that, God can take your mess and make it his message, that he can create a beautiful plan for you if you just keep staying the route. So that was tough to swallow, especially when I was woke up with being paralyzed from the neck down. But I felt like I had to believe in it. Like I just needed to believe in it because I didn't want to live this life, the life that I was living. And so I just chose to believe in hope, and hope is a choice. I mean, it really is. It's not something that you can see. it doesn't even have to be rational. You just have to just cling to it and just keep doing your part to climb yourself out. But hope is an absolute choice. It's not going to be completely evident and just smack you in the face. It's just something that you're going to have to put your blinders on to everything else, all the other noise that's going on that's trying to distract you, and just believe in it.
Mm-hmm. And now also a quote that I've heard you say in a few different interviews that I listened to was, life's lowest moments can be the source of life's greatest gifts. Can you share more about that?
Yeah. So, I mean, right away, I think to my injury, it was my spinal cord injury and losing my physical movements, and it set me to this new path. And so because of that moment and that event, I started a nonprofit called the Chris Nolan Foundation, which helps other people with spinal cord injuries. And we help improve rehab equipment and opportunities, but we also started a kids wheelchair camp, which we had our first one back in June. And that was so much fun. We had 25 campers and we did zip lining, laser tag, archery,
that's so awesome.
Horseback riding. The kids had a blast. No one wanted to leave. It was so much fun. And my foundation, we paid for everything so that no one had to pay up anything. Just got to get there and we'll take care of the rest. And that was just a blast. But just seeing how, you know, this event of me just lying face down on the field, how that led to this foundation and then bringing all these people together and forming this community and just the smiles that you get to witness was such a beautiful thing. But that was, you know, that was almost 9 years later. And it just shows too that, you know, things take time. And also, mm-hmm. something I've been reflecting on, I'm not even sure if I mentioned in this interview yet, but we're foster and adoptive parents.
Yes.
We have fostered 17 children and have adopted 5 girls. And 4 of our 5 girls are siblings. They're 4 sisters. And we met them in Florida, which is where we're living now. But my training for my rehab to walk Emily down the aisle took me to Florida, where we eventually met our 4 girls. We fostered
wow.
them and then adopted them. So just the fact that these girls are in our lives and how special they are and how much they love and joy they bring to our lives, and thinking that, you know, this wouldn't have happened without my injury, and just all the resilience and the courage and the insights that I feel like I have now that I can share with them and I can share with other people have all, again, come a result of my lowest moments, and learning from those moments have given me so many gifts that I otherwise wouldn't have.
Have you been always such a generous man, Chris? Because I mean, literally listening to you, and it's like you're choosing, once you realize what an inspiration it was for you to walk across that stage and how much it meant for people, all of a sudden you're like, well, you used people to motivate you to do the 7 yards, right? Even when it was hard. And then you also started this foundation, and then you've fostered 17 children, you've adopted 5 girls, and it's so much about taking care of others. Like, has that always been who you were even before the injury, or was it even like inspired greater in you after?
It definitely inspired greater in me afterwards. And I would say it really was a result of seeing the generosity of other people, like seeing how great people were to me and all the support that I got. And then comparing myself to other people going through the same situation. Most people don't have the family support. They don't have the faith. They don't have the insurance, the finances to successfully get out of their situation that they're in. And I had all of that. So how I had the financial and insurance support was because I was injured in a NCAA sanctioned game. And because this game was overseen by the NCAA, they paid for all my medical and rehab expenses, and they still wow. support me today, which is unheard of. Like, no insurances do that other than like a special risk insurance like this was. And so seeing other people who they can't afford to have a nurse or a caregiver, they can't afford an accessible vehicle, they can't afford the training or the rehab, and then they don't have the family support, the friend support. Like, seeing that, like, you just can't help but feel almost guilty and like you just want to do something about that, to like to give what's been given to you. And that's also a question that I ask myself, and you can, how you can give back to others is just think about what's been given to you to get you to this point, and how can you give that to somebody else. So seeing all that was been given to me, I just had to give it back. And then plus Emily, she's, like I said, she's that type 2 selfless person, and she's like the most selfless person I know. So you can't help but she's stretched me in so many ways. So that the whole fostering, you know, first came about through her. Like, that was never on my radar ever. I didn't even know about that world or what kids were going through. And she just opened my eyes. And so we took that on. And, you know, I was scared. I had my reservations of like, oh my gosh, you know, am I equipped to be a dad? Like, can I take this on? Can we take this on? Are we ready for this? And all these doubts and insecurities definitely like bubbled up to make that decision. But we just went for it. And it's been successful, and it's been the most rewarding thing. And I just continue to see how giving back to others just brings more joy to my life. You don't do it to bring joy to your life, but you give it to help other people. But it just somehow it returns the favor right back to you.
What has fatherhood taught you?
Fatherhood has also taught me to just, one, let go too. Like you gotta let
go. Amen to that.
you gotta be patient. You want to be in control. You want all these things to be, you know, perfect. But you just gotta, you know, I don't know. You just have to lead by example. You have to just be encouraging and positive and hopeful, and just continue to do positive praise. And it takes time too. You know, our girls, they've all come in with, you know, past abuse and trauma, and they've learned ways, or they thought they knew how life was supposed to go. And we had to kind of unwire some behaviors and some thinking about themselves, and just help them realize that they are loved and they're special. Because, you know, people who feel unloved act out in very unloving ways.
Yeah. Try to then get you to not love them, so then they can be right about how they're not loved.
Exactly.
Yeah. I worked a lot with at-risk youth foster kids, and it was tough. So hats off to you. And I see the pattern that happens. Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, hurting people hurt people. And so just understanding that, being patient, and just coming from a place of compassion and love and understanding has been our go-to, and just trust that things will work out. And it's been amazing to see over almost 2 years now, the growth and development that these girls have had.
They're so lucky to have you, Chris and Emily. What a blessing. In your motivational talks, so you speak about the power to stand, and you talk, so in it, I know you mentioned it's like really about how to shift your attitude and perspective and to make an impact on others, and also how to overcome adversity and challenges and to reach your goals. What are some of the key takeaways that you share with your audience when you're doing your talks on how to overcome their challenges so that they can achieve their goals?
Yeah. And so like you mentioned, you know, I talk about that standing up after you've been knocked down, because in life, we're all going to get hit. We're all going to get take these knockdowns. Mm-hmm. You got to get back up.
You do.
Standing back up. And so that's such a huge thing in life, is just to always get back up. And so I talk about, you know, kind of the power of progress and focusing on what you can do and your abilities, and just like really honing in on that, and just how you're looking at things and what lens are you looking through. Because it's so easy to keep tally of what's going wrong and what you don't have. It's so easy. And for me, I have to be so intentional and so persistent with focusing on what I can do and my abilities and all the blessings. And it just fills me up. That keeps me positive. That's where my attitude comes from. Because people ask me that all the time, like, how are you so happy? How are you so positive? Because they see me, they see my challenges. They see, you know, the obstacles I have to go through every single day. And, you know, every single day I wake up and there's no escaping the challenges that I'm facing, but I'm just always honing in on the blessings and all the things that I'm able to do. You know, there's even some wheelchair perks to my situation with having a spinal cord injury. Like, you know, you can never lose a game of musical chairs. Like, I have an undefeated record. I've never been beaten. And I played my girls. Actually, it was really funny. The first time I was playing with my girls, you know, one by one, they were getting eliminated until my chair was left. And that's when they realized, hey, like, you have your own chair. Like, that's not fair. Then they, you know, tried pushing me out of my chair. But of course, that disqualified them. So I still won. But you know, there's so many little things like that that I'm always, you know, just trying to find and be grateful for. So those are some of the things that I talk about in my presentation. And also I talk about, you know, that Georgia, you know, how we all can be a Dr. Georgia for someone else, that we all can make an impact on another person, and that we don't know what other people are going through, and to always be considerate and thoughtful of what someone else might be facing, and to be nice. And that it's a choice to be nice. Yeah. I see it. I bring out the best in people. People are always nice and encouraging to me. They are. They see me. They're sympathetic. They want to be there for me, but yet they're not always that way with somebody else, with someone's challenges you can't see. But just to always remember, we're facing something. We're all facing something.
Absolutely.
And then also talk about too a little bit about the who's counting on you, and really diving deep into that, and so that everyone, you can always find motivation and purpose just by acknowledging the people in your life that are counting on you. Like, I know that my daughters, my wife, family, they're all counting on me. And like, knowing that helps me just be the best man, father, person that I can be, because they're all watching my example on how I handle my challenges and how I take on my day-to-day life. And knowing that, just I feel that responsibility in a good way, where I want to be the best version of myself. And I think if everyone can really reflect on the people that might be counting on them and how their influences impacts everyone, it just will make this world a better place, and you'll be more living a more purposeful life.
So good. So good. And I want to highlight what you said around where you're placing your focus. Like you said, it's so easy to focus on what we don't have or what's not right about our lives. And it does take that practice and that mental discipline to choose to focus on your blessings, to focus on what you're grateful for, what you do have. And even like what I heard in you, find the like almost the humor or the fun in it. You're like, I cannot lose a game of musical chairs. Like there's something to be said about bringing in that lightness to our situations, because sometimes it can just feel so dark and heavy and it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And again, for wherever you're placing your attention and focus is what you're going to experience. So if you're focusing on lack or not enough, you're going to feel that. And if you're focusing on blessings and all the things to be grateful for, you're going to feel that as well. And you're also going to feel kindness and compassion, right? And that's probably, you literally exude it, Chris. Like every cell of your being is like, how can I help? How can I help? And clearly with you and Emily as a team in that way, it's like when you're in the space of wanting to give kindness, you need to feel what you're giving. Right. Mm-hmm. So the fact that you're both so focused on how can I give, how can I serve, how can I spread kindness, how can I spread hope and inspiration and positivity, you literally need to feel it within yourself before you can give it. So all day long, if that's where your focus is, you're constantly benefiting from feeling that feeling first.
Yeah.
So really love that.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. And you've also said, you know, what it, and maybe this is kind of similar to what I asked earlier, but what if we start challenging ourselves to view our setbacks as a setup for something new? You did touch on that, but I'd love for you kind of maybe to highlight that more, because I know that, you know, this setback set you up to go to Florida, where then now it was a setup for something new to become foster parents. Mm-hmm. But have there been anything else in your life where you've had the setback set you up for something new?
Oh man, there's so many things that have really set me up given my setback. So I would say one that just stands out as you talked about too, about being a father. And so being a father from a chair at first was really tough, because my dad, he was very active and playful with me. And, you know, he's one of my best friends, and we were always, you know, hiking or swimming or going to do this. He was rebounding for me. We played sports together. He was my coach. Like, he was very physically active, not just emotionally, but also physically. And so when having my kids, kind of having that just thrust onto you, I thought about all those things I wanted to do to give to them what was given to me. And it really hit me hard that, wow, you know, I can't throw them around in the pool. I can't pick them up off the floor when they're crying. And it really hurt. And it was a huge setback, you know, just emotionally, just thinking about the, you know, what kind of dad I want to be. But then it set me up to start thinking about, you know what, I have to let this go. And I need to focus on the dad I can be, and I can still be a great father, whether I can actually physically pick them up off the floor, whether I can throw them in the pool, or, you know, do something playful like that. Like, I can speak life into them. I can be their number one cheerleader. I can just exude love and hope and kindness and just be an example for them. And then it also then forced me to, like, okay, what are ways I can be a little bit more physically active? And it got me thinking, I have this broken down power wheelchair in my garage. All it needs is a new battery. And if I get a new battery, it goes pretty fast, and so we can go on bike rides. We can, you know, drive around in town to go to the park. We can go to even out to eat, just driving from this chair. And so it motivated me to get this chair working so I can go fast, because I'm in a manual style chair. I'm not real fast. I'm pretty slow with it. But in that other chair, I'm zipping around and I can keep up with them. So it, that painful moment of realizing, okay, I'm not going to be able to pick them up or to play with them the way I envision for myself, but to let that go, then focus in on, okay, what are some ways that I can be involved? And that gave me that opportunity. If I don't think I would have really dealt with that, that heaviness, then I don't think I would have had this power chair working, because it's been broken down for probably 5 years until I went and that moment happened and I got that battery.
Wow. And also it's like, it's almost like our setbacks is a call for us to become creative. Like, you got really creative. And what are other ways, right? Because sometimes we can get so stuck in, like, this is how it's supposed to be. This is how I want to do it. And then we get stuck in this lens, not realizing there's millions of possibilities. Mm-hmm. And it's so beautiful. Again, I love how you're constantly shifting your attention and focus to what can I do instead of what's wrong or what's bad or where you're stuck. Mm-hmm. So look, you've got a lot going on, Chris. You've got your book, you have another book coming out. You've got that documentary, motivational speaking, your nonprofit, your camp, your children, your wife, your own health. There's so much. How do you stay present, centered, and balanced with your own needs? Like, is there any practices that you do daily that make sure that Chris gets taken care of?
That's a good question. You know, I would say I don't get on social media a lot. And I think just me putting in the way of the phone and kind of putting away all the other things I have going on and just being really present with my kids and just going to the park with them or just hanging out with them, playing a game with them. Those things just really fill me up and just kind of helps me stay really present with them, because I do kind of get in a way where I'm always thinking about down the road and, like, okay, what needs to be done? Just kind of have that entrepreneurial hat on a lot and, like, what else can I be doing? And just constantly want to be going and working, building, those sort of things. So just stopping and just, you know, doing things with my kids, my wife, have really helped me just stay really focused on really what's most important too. Those other things aren't, well, they're great things, but what's the most important is my family.
So cool. You clearly are also an extraordinary achiever. You've achieved so much even before the age of 30, right? What do you see for yourself in the future?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, something that jumps to mind right now is that, so I have my one camp. It's going on every summer. I would love to expand it. I would love to open up other wheelchair camps and partner up with other facilities across the country and having more camp opportunities that are adaptive. And so that someone's in a chair, especially kids, their self-esteem can be pretty low. You know, they're different than other kids, and kids are ruthless. I can't imagine being in a wheelchair, like as a young kid. Like that would be really hard. Thankfully, you know, I'm thankful I got hurt when I did as an 18-year-old kid, because I kind of helped. I kind of already knew who I was. I mean, I was still learning and developing, don't get me wrong, but I had a pretty good self-confidence from my past that kind of helped build me up and helped me be more resilient. And as a younger kid, you know, that'd be tough not to, you know, fall victim to the bullying and maybe believing what other people in your life are saying. So I just want to have more camp opportunities to really build these kids up and show them their capabilities and their abilities. And so they're not focusing on what they don't have or they can't do. So that would be amazing. I want to continue just get on more stages and travel the world as a motivational speaker. I love doing that. I'm constantly developing my script and my speech to new messages, new audiences, and just want to raise a great, healthy, happy family too. Those are really important to me. And I just got my truck. So I just have a vehicle adapted for me.
Oh, cool.
And so I'm really excited to take that on the road more and continue to drive that and just be a little bit more independent with my life, and just whether it's dropping my girls off at a dance recital or running an errand for Emily, as she's done a lot of errands for me. Got a lot of making up to do, but it'll be really fun to just get behind the wheel of my truck. And again, I like driving as it kind of puts you in that present state and just reflection. There's not as many distractions.
Yeah. What do you and Emily do for each other or together? Because you got a lot of little responsibilities in the home. Do you both take time for the two of you as well? Like, how do you maintain your relationship together?
Yeah, what helps is that we both work from home. Mm-hmm. So we're with each other all day long while the kids are at school or at work or whatever they're doing. So we get that time together. And also we put them to bed at a pretty decent time. So it's we have that the night to have to ourselves and to talk and to chat. Because like you said, though, we do have to be intentional about kind of making sure we set aside time, you know, whether it's like a breakfast date or a lunch. Just making sure that we have us time is important, because you are just constantly going. There's so many distractions, and you want to make sure that you're filling each other up and, you know, keep that healthy relationship strong. What a great example that it can be for your kids.
So much good stuff, Chris. So grateful for you. So I'm going to ask you three final questions before we close this out, which I have so many more questions for you. I want to keep talking. But what's something unique about you that most people don't know?
Unique. I mean, I don't know if it's unique, but something that maybe people don't always see the side of me is like, I'm a really competitive person.
Maybe I can see that.
Yeah. So like, we're playing a board game or a card game. Like, I'm pretty into it. Like, I want to win. I'm not like trash talking or like super intense, but I'm focused. Like, I want to win this game. I'm looking to how I can win. So I would say that's kind of a trait that maybe people don't always get to see, that competitiveness. And then also just like, I think it also comes from like being a sports fan. Like, I love watching. I love watching football still. Like, it's not something that I don't hate the game or anything like that. I don't have any regrets, but I enjoy, you know, watching my football teams play basketball games. So I love sports and the competitiveness.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. I love that you still love watching football, because that setback set you up for your greatness. I mean, just who you've become in the process from that. I mean, yeah, you could have maybe gone on to play pro football, but what you're doing in your work now is massive inspiration for so many people to build up hope, resilience, and faith again in what's possible for themselves, you know, and what they can create. When you're in a dark place, what's your go-to to get out?
I'd say right away to feel it, to not push it away, and not to find a distraction, because it's really easy to find distractions, especially with phones and iPads and Netflix and all those streaming channels. Even, you know, with your family, it's like you can kind of, all right, I'm going to just move on to something else. But sometimes it's really good just to feel a frustration or an anger, and then to talk about it, like let it out and to really process it. And I feel like the more I can process it and feel it, the more that I'm able to free myself to get into action and to figure out how I can stop from feeling that. Like, I don't like feeling bad. I don't like feeling frustrated or angry. It happens, but then I'm always very proactive. I'm like, okay, I felt that. How can I stop from feeling this way again? Like, is there anything that I can be doing to be proactive about not letting that occur? So I'd say those are kind of my go-tos of just making sure I don't try to push it off to the side and just feel it and get to work.
Good. Yeah, because if you don't feel it, it's going to keep coming back up till you do. Yep. Knowing what you know now, the question is usually, knowing what you know now, what advice would you give your 10-year-old self? But I'm going to switch it to, knowing what you know now, what advice would you give to your 18-year-old self?
After my accident? Before my accident?
How about before and after?
Okay, I would say after my accident, to just stay patient, stay the course, and just trust that things will work out the way it should be. Because it was so tough to wrestle with my future and thinking about all the uncertainty around it and just like what ifs. And you're not going to have the answers to those what ifs until you get there. So why add that extra stress to your life and to yourself when you can't answer those questions? You just got to do what you can in the moment to get to work. So I'd say just, you know, let go of the future uncertainty as well. You know, before, I would say, oh man, I would say just enjoy the moment. Like I just didn't have the perspective too that life can change in an instant. Like just to really understand the fragility of life. Cause when I was hurt, when I was on the field, I kept thinking, I was pretty calm because I was like, there's no way something bad can happen to me. Like bad things happen to other people. Like it happens to people that you read about in the newspaper, that you watch on television, or it happens to the guest on your podcast. Like there's no way there's something bad's happening to me. So I just had this like naive belief, this confidence that bad things don't happen to me, that I'm like immune to it. And so I was kind of just ignorant to that. So maybe just understanding the preciousness of life and to enjoy what you have.
Beautiful. And where can people connect with you, Chris?
Yeah, go to my website, chrisnorton.org. And that's where you can learn about my speaking, my foundation, the books, and then my documentary that's coming out too, the 7 Yards documentary.
That when should is that be coming out?
There's no hard date. It's the director is wrapping up the finishing edits to the film, but I'm hoping April of 2020. So fingers crossed there, but no, like I said, no final dates. And then we're also working on distribution. So it'll depend on distribution. Hopefully, you know, we're having some pretty exciting conversations with some major platforms. So hopefully those all work out once the film is done. So keep on the lookout for that. And then, social media wise, I'm pretty active on Instagram. That's like my most active spot, but I'm on Facebook and Twitter, LinkedIn, you name it, YouTube, but connect with me there.
What's your IG handle?
It's Chris A. Norton 16. Chris A. Norton 16.
Got it. Chris, thank you so much again for being on the show. So grateful again that Angel connected us, and really inspired by your journey and what you're creating now in the world. It's really powerful.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
I am truly touched, moved, and inspired by Chris. What a mega huge heart he has. And it's so inspiring how he leads from a deep level of love, trust, and faith. And it's amazing how Chris stands in full responsibility to be the author of his life and future, and how he's always striving to have more impact. You guys, Chris is a powerful reminder and a firsthand example of choosing hope even when it feels impossible. You know, you always have the power to choose. And you can absolutely create whatever it is that you want when you are clear on what you want and you take the aligned, inspired action on your soul intentions. So you guys, make sure you get signed up for my Manifest Your Best 2020 Intention Setting Online Party. It's going to be really powerful as it's been in previous years that I've run it. And my favorite part is all the emails and messages that I receive from the participants in the workshop sharing all the things that they're magically manifesting. Now I'm air quoting magically, which you guys can't see, because it really isn't magic. Like, it may feel like magic, but it's not. Because when you're clear on your intentions and you understand the laws of the universe and you energetically align with them, you've got the true power of manifestation in your heart and your hands. So again, in the Manifest Your Best 2020 online workshop, I'm sharing a specific intention setting exercise that has helped me and thousands of my clients powerfully manifest our soul desires and more. And I'm also going to share specific tools and hypnosis techniques to partner with your subconscious mind to support you in manifesting your intentions. You guys, this is a game changer. And I'm going to share metaphysical techniques to support you in getting energetically aligned with the universe to ensure your intentions manifest in your reality. So for more details and to get yourself signed up, head over to bit.ly/manifestyourbest2020. Again, that's bit.ly/manifestyourbest2020. I cannot wait to support you in making your 2020 your best year yet. All right, you guys, thank you so much for listening. And if you're the kind of person who likes to help others, then make sure you share this out with your friends and family, because if you got value, they will too. And if you want to connect with Chris, you can go to chrisnorton.org, or you can get all of that info in the show notes. And that's over at stephaniekwong.com/EP66. Okay, my friends, until next time, as always, I'm sending you so, so much love.